keep stacking days and keep stacking shows. And this offseason is going to be over in no time. This week is, because guess what? It is Friday. It's the Podcast Daily. That's Bill Landis. I'm Austin Ward. And it's going to be a Freshman Friday. Kind of. And the best thing about a Freshman Friday is that it leads into a Sophomore Saturday. And Bill Landis has all of the information about how last year's freshman class, how many snaps they played, the production level, and then we're going to figure out what that means for year two. Bill, you spent all week crunching the numbers, breaking it down, wrote about it, ohiostate.rivals.com. Now we've got to talk about your research. What did you find?
You know, it was rather easy research, because it turns out the freshman class didn't play all that much. So like, I sat down to look up a bunch of stuff and I was like, oh, that went by kind of fast. So it was an odd year, I think, for that freshman class, because one, there wasn't a whole lot in the way of like opportunities for like a surprise freshman to become a starter, or even frankly a consistent contributor outside of one or two guys. And then there also weren't a ton of games that were like 50-0 where Ohio State will play freshmen more often than not. So they signed 20 freshmen. I'm not counting Nigel Glover because he was technically a transfer. So 20 out of high school, and 11 of them ended up redshirting. So like more than half the class redshirted. So that was like, I knew that, but I was still kind of surprised by it, seeing it in writing. But, you know, some guys did some stuff for sure. Like they were noteworthy ones, but I think what's more interesting is maybe about what happens from here, as opposed to what happened last season for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, we're going to get into that. We're going to do the offense today, and we'll be back with the defense early next week. But I wonder if that number is about to start dropping dramatically. And it's easy to say in the offseason, like Ryan Day did this week when he was on his media tour with 97.1 The Fan, like, got to play more guys, got to play more depth. Mm-hmm. Get through the length of the season and then build for the future. Like, that's pretty easy to say in May. And I think he legitimately means it. Does that actually apply to the true freshmen? Again, when you have these other classes that are still ahead, like Ohio State didn't just start recruiting at a high level. So the opportunities, how many will be there? I don't know. That's going to be part of the work in progress. And we try and figure that out, and we won't have the answers on this show. Spoiler alert, but at least for last year's class, we can start spinning that forward and what that means for them. And the headliner there, at least in terms of action in year one, was?
It was Carnell Tate. Yeah. When I wrote it, I just listed them in order of like where they were ranked by Rivals. And I had forgotten actually that Brandon Ennis was rated higher than Carnell Tate, but Carnell Tate played by far the most snaps on offense, the most snaps of any true freshman last year. It was 292. On offense, and then another 102 on special teams, which I think maybe people probably didn't catalog all that much, because when a guy plays as much as he does on offense, you just pay most attention to that. But it was north of 300, almost 400 snaps for Carnell Tate in total last year. And even though the statistical production like wasn't crazy, I think that, like, in this era of Ohio State receiver recruiting, anytime a true freshman plays like 200 plus snaps, that means a whole lot, right? Even like, you know, even if he only catches 10 or so balls, whatever it was that Carnell caught last year, playing that much, like being trusted that much by the staff that early in a room that is always loaded, I think is noteworthy. So obviously that means that Carnell, I think, is going to be a pretty big part of the operation as a sophomore.
I'll be honest, that snap count surprised me, even having watched every single snap last year for Ohio State. It didn't feel like he was out that much, because I was mainly paying attention to when he wasn't, because he had that foot injury that he was dealing with. Mm-hmm. He would have played even more than this. And I think that's what I was expecting. Not just like volume of catches or touchdowns. Like, he was going to play and produce a lot more if he was physically able to. And again, we've talked a million times about Ohio State protecting injury information and, you know, why they do that, why we wish that they did not do that. And I think this is another example. Like, I think in some respects, we talked so much about Carnell Tate, Marvin Harrison did, in the spring and into the summer and training camps, like, look out, this guy's going to play a ton. He's different than a normal true freshman. He's ahead of Marvin's, you know, pace as a true freshman by Marvin's own admission. And it was like, oh, these guys were lying. We weren't trying to lie. He was, I didn't know that he had like plantar fasciitis injury, you know, concerns in his foot that were slowing him down. He was still playing through that a good amount. But again, you're looking to what that snap count means while injured. It means he's going to play a ton in year two.
Yeah. I mean, he had the bar for a freshman receiver, I guess now is what Garrett Wilson did in 2019. And Carnell didn't do that. He had 18 receptions on 28 targets for 264 yards and a touchdown, which is like, again, not something you write a book about, but it's a better freshman season than Marvin Harrison and Chris Olave had, right? It was a more productive season than two of the best receivers that I've ever played here had, right? So like even that little bit of production and the snap count is noteworthy. And, you know, I think he'll be, I don't know. I don't know that I'd pick him to be their statistical leader this year. Like I think I would pick Emeka. I think most people will pick Emeka Ibuka. But I think Carnell Tate is going to start, obviously, and play, I don't know, most of the meaningful snaps. The thing with Carnell, too, and it's true, I guess, of everybody in the receiver room at this point, is you can move him around. Like he was not only an outside guy last year. I think he played almost 30% of his snaps in the slot. So it's not like a either-or conversation with he and Jeremiah Smith or he and Emeka Ibuka or like whatever. Throw whichever receiver you think is going to play out there. So Carnell's going to play a ton. And I actually think like, It's not a reflection on Carnell as a player that we just talked so much about Jeremiah Smith. It's more about Jeremiah Smith, right? But I think the season might happen, and then people will be like, oh, yeah, Carnell. That guy's still here.
And remember that?
Good. Yeah.
He was last year's offseason darling, and then he was only a true freshman. And guess what? Freshmen turn into sophomores. That's usually an encouraging thing. That'd be pretty important for Brandon Ennis as well, because he did not have the benefit of the spring. He dealt with last spring as a true freshman. He did not have that. And then he dealt with injuries about midway through camp this spring. So he's a little bit trickier to pin down right now.
Yeah, I actually thought that Brandon had not burned his red shirt last year, but he did, because he played, oh, I think, 11 games on special teams. And the thing that sucks is like you went you play like two snaps on punt coverage and it's like, well, that counts just as much as playing 60 snaps and having 13 catches. Like, well, I don't know if that necessarily makes sense. So Brandon did use up a year of eligibility last year by playing, but he only played 32 snaps on offense. He only had one catch. It was a long touchdown against Purdue. So again, there's not a whole lot there to go off of, but it seemed to me like he was having a really good spring right before he had that setback at the end. It just felt like you heard his name a lot. And the thing that's hard with projecting the sophomore season for Brandon Ennis is I think he is probably slot only. He might be the only guy in the room I'd say that about at this point. So then what are the opportunities like if that's the case? Because obviously Emeka Ibuka is going to play there a lot, I think. But Emeka will move outside too, and that should open up some opportunities for Brandon Ennis to definitely play more than he played last year. But maybe it's not the typical sophomore jump we've seen for a lot of Ohio State's best receivers. Maybe that'll be reserved for 2025 when Brandon's a junior and Emeka has gone off to the NFL. But whether it's whatever he can find in the slot, whatever Chip Kelly might want to do with him as a ball carrier, perhaps even in the return game, which we talked about a couple of times, like there are going to be multiple avenues for Brandon Ennis to help this team. And I think he will. I just don't think he's going to have like 1,000 yards receiving this year necessarily.
Brandon Ennis is not the only test case, but he's one of the better ones for what we're talking about with how much Ohio State is going to rotate and play that depth to bring it along. Like, I think they're going to be better at this. You fight the urge to just leave Emeka out there for every single snap. You don't have to do that over the course of a season. Emeka's going to get plenty of touches, even just by playing 40 to 50 snaps a game. I'm just spitballing those numbers, but there's got to be an opportunity there to let Brandon Ennis do the same things. Ohio State's going to score points. They're going to score a lot in the first few weeks of the season. That's the prime opportunity to bring Brandon Ennis along. He's not going to continue to average 58 yards per catch and score every time he touches it. I think we can adjust.
Don't sell him short.
I just want to adjust the expectations slightly. But I mean, I envision him doing all the same things offensively that Chip Kelly and Ryan Day are going to do with Emeka.
Yeah.
And if he does that 25% of the time, good.
I think that's right. And I will add this, I guess. I think there is the possibility. I don't know if it's likely, but it's definitely possible that Brandon Ennis emerges like as their best blocking receiver. And then if he does, what's like that can, I think, alter those snap counts, like push them up a little bit. And I don't think necessarily like at the expense of another receiver, but maybe that leads Ohio State to like doing some more stuff with four receivers on the field and still running the ball because you think you have a weapon in Brandon Ennis who, you know, puts defenses in conflict because obviously he's a good receiver, but he's also a willing and capable blocker. So I'm excited to see what it looks like. Like he might be, he's on the short list of players I think maybe I'm most excited / intrigued by going into this season. And not because I think he's going to have a monster year, just because like I'm curious like just how they plan to utilize him.
Third in that class in offensive snap counts was who, Bill?
Luke Montgomery. 44 on offense, 27 on special teams. The offensive snaps split between playing the jumbo tight end spot and a little bit of right tackle. I think it was 27 tackle and 17 at tight end. So again, not a ton, but also noteworthy to put a true freshman kind of in that Bison role, which is why
does PFF not differentiate between the Bison and the tight end? They're not the same position.
They should. They do not. I wish they would just put a little B up there, but no, it just has them as like tight end left, tight end right, or inline tight end left or something like that. But yeah, no Bison yet on PFF. We'll get them to change that. Yeah. So, and his actual, like, again, I sent this to one of our text subscribers asked me when I sent something out earlier, like, how do you put like PFF numbers into context? Like, shouldn't these be taken with a grain of salt based on like the level of competition for guys like Luke Montgomery and Jelani Thurman? Cause they're mostly playing against backups. And I was like, yeah, because every PFF grade should be taken with a grain of salt, but it's not a bad thing to use, to help, I don't know, compare players or whatever. So Luke Montgomery's run blocking grade last year was, I think, like the fifth best among all offensive linemen on the team, but only two starters were better than him. Matthew Jones and Josh Fryer, who had the best run blocking grade on the team, which feels like it's worth repeating whenever we could, Ken. So it was a pretty good debut season, I think, for Luke Montgomery. All things considered, like most freshman offensive linemen don't play. His classmates in this recruiting class didn't play. So he got on the field and he has an opportunity now to be a starter. We'll see where that goes. It feels still pretty up in the air, but the fact that he has that little bit of experience under his belt, I think will help him at least a little bit as he goes through the summer trying to win a job.
I wonder if I think that's a good point from the tech subscriber, the level of competition. And I wonder how much of that is influenced by the Bison responsibilities being not easy, but perhaps easier than playing traditional guard. Like the guys that you're matching up against and the responsibilities are probably a bit more straightforward and cut and dried for him. And maybe they were easier to take advantage of. Again, not easy, but easier as a true freshman. And like, again, that doesn't mean that we're saying like he's already a better run blocker than everybody else on the team, but like just trying to put that in context and explain how Ohio State put him in positions where he could succeed, which is at the end of the day, their most important job as a coaching staff.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a streamlined spot, right? It's your only run blocking, although you can throw them the ball. I just want to really put that out there into the universe. You can throw them the ball, but yeah, he only was a run blocker in those situations. And then probably most of the time blocking a linebacker or perhaps even a safety, maybe sometimes a defensive end, but like he wasn't in there trying to handle 320 pound defensive tackles all the time. So that's different when you're doing that on the down to down basis, playing guard or even playing tackle, wherever Luke ultimately ends up. But it's better than like going into it totally green. Right. And I think it almost makes sense to me maybe that Luke Montgomery couldn't quite sustain throughout an entirety of the spring as the starter, just because he is new to this. Not that I'm saying that should be the expectation all the time, but I think it's a fair expectation probably most of the time for a young offensive lineman that it's just difficult to do everything the right way and like really slam the door shut on a starting competition when you've not done it a ton or at all. But I'm not writing him off. Like I think he's still of the people who are likely to play that position. I think you can make an argument that Luke has the highest ceiling, maybe, certainly based off recruiting pedigree, you could do that. So He still very much has like a bright future ahead of him, even if the spring didn't end maybe the way he wanted it to. And it's clear, I think, that the staff believes in him based on how they used him last year and how they gave him the shot to win that job this spring.
Right. From there, I feel like the spotlight has to go to Jelani Thurman.
You would think. Actually.
Oh.
It goes to Lincoln Kienholz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. Shout out to the Cotton Bowl.
Shout out to the Cotton Bowl. This like quasi surprised me as I was going back and looking stuff up, but I think it makes sense because a lot of quarterbacks prior to the rule changing like end up redshirting at Ohio State. But since Braxton Miller was the starter as a true freshman in 2011, the freshman with the most pass attempts is Kyle McCord, and number two is Lincoln Kienholz because of the Cotton Bowl.
What? Oh my God.
Yeah, so we ended up playing 60 snaps last year.
Save that one to drop it on me. Jeez.
It's pretty crazy, right?
That's wild.
Yeah, so he really got, I mean, he got baptized by fire last year in the Cotton Bowl. And, like, I hear the criticisms, I guess, of, like, how he didn't handle it well. I really just don't, like, see a path to how he could have with the way the offensive line played in that game and what seems to be just a lack of reps for Lincoln, like leading up to the game. It just seems like they were so hyper focused on getting Devin Brown ready for that game that it came at the expense of making sure that Lincoln Kienholz it would be ready if and when they needed him. And then they put him out there and they just kind of couldn't do a lot. So I didn't take that as like any kind of indictment really on what Lincoln is going to be as a quarterback. It was just kind of an unfortunate situation for a pretty inexperienced player to be thrown into. But he did end up playing 60 snaps and throwing far more passes, I think, as a true freshman than anyone expected him to.
I don't know which straw man we're arguing against, but like suggesting that in any way that was Lincoln Kienholz's fault or that he can't become a starting caliber, championship caliber quarterback for Ohio State based on the Cotton Bowl, to me seems ridiculous, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, I would almost absurd, because I remember in real time being like, what is this game plan? I don't understand what they're doing. Can you at least let Lincoln Kienholz try to throw down the field? There was the one throw. They did let him throw deep to Jaden Ballard. And I thought, well, that was a pretty decent throw. Was it perfect? No. Would Marvin Harrison have made that catch? Probably. Is that fair for Jaden Ballard? Maybe not. But like those were the things, like trying to figure out a way to evaluate what was happening. That's an example of like how head spinning that Cotton Bowl was to try and like understand what you were seeing. And like, I don't put it on Kienholz at all. I'm sure many people, most people probably don't. But if you do, I just like, remember that Enoch Vamahi was playing extensively in that game. Matthew Jones was moved to center. Everything was in shambles on that offensive line, which was getting eaten alive by Missouri. There was no time for any quarterback to do anything. And it became so predictable what Ohio State was going to do on offense. Like, Missouri was just like, oh, well, this is easy now. And like, yeah, they were like, Lincoln Kienholz was like, you talk about being thrown into the fire. Like, that was a bonfire.
Yeah, it was really difficult. And to be clear, like, I don't mean to make it sound like I hear a lot of criticism of Lincoln in that game. Just like enough that was like throughout the course of the quarterback, you know, conversation in the offseason, like Lincoln had a shot and like he's not it. It's like, all right. I don't think you can make that determination right now, even if it's a short list of people who might have thought that. But it's interesting.
Bill, if Ohio State, like if Ryan Day and Chip Kelly didn't think there was something there, like he wouldn't be here at the end. He wouldn't be here in the middle of May. Like that's right. Let's make that clear.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think the fact that he is, it's okay. It's all right. We're of the same mind. I think that he is here still when certainly he had opportunities to go elsewhere if he wanted to, is in some way an indication the staff thinks they might have something here. And that's not the path to be Ohio State starting quarterback is going to be incredibly difficult for Lincoln Kienholz. Probably more difficult than anyone else in the room because of what's ahead of him and what's behind him. But he remains a very talented athlete and I think a quarterback with a pretty high ceiling and one that I think Ohio State still sees a lot in. Whatever that leads into, I'm not entirely sure, but I certainly don't sit here in May in the second year of his college career after his first spring practice and think to myself, like, yeah, that kid doesn't have a chance. Like, I think he very much has a chance.
Yeah, I agree. Now do we get to Jelani Thurman?
We do get the Jelani Thurman. He and one other freshman on offense played last year. So Jelani played 30 snaps total, 24 on offense, only 6 on special teams, but he did play in 5 games. So he burned his red shirt. He had 2 catches last year, both against Michigan State, right? So again,
one with a great first down celebration for not a first down.
Yes. This was the stat that I think had the person ask me about like PFF and what's real and what's not. Second highest run blocking grade on the team last year was Jelani Thurman behind Josh Fryer. That surprised me a little bit.
I can understand the need for clarification and context on that, because if you ask Jelani Thurman or Keenan Bailey, they'd say, what's the big challenge for heading into year 2? It is becoming a more physical and consistent run blocker.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. And that is probably the prime example of don't always believe what you see with the PFF stuff. Like I mentioned it because I think it's worth mentioning, if only to suggest that there's potential there, right? Even if it's not all real, like clearly with a guy who's as big as Jelani and moves as well as he does, there's definite potential to be a high level blocker. Will he be Luke Farrell? Probably not, but I don't know that you want him to be necessarily because of what he gives you as a receiver too, right? So you got to find that balance there, but that makes it hard for me to figure out what is going to happen with him this year. Cause I don't think, right, there's no definite tight end one yet, right? At least I don't think so. You can tell me if you think differently. So it just feels like the door is open if Jelani like really puts it all together this summer, that he could, in theory, like emerge as the number one tight end for this team. I don't think I'd bet on that, but I think it's on the table at least, just given all his immense talents and skill set and size compared to the rest of that room. And the fact that no one else in that room has proven that they can be the number one tight end at this level of college football yet. So I'm just interested to see where that goes for him.
Yeah, I think it's still more likely than not that Will Kaczmarek will be tight end one, mm-hmm. but not in a way that's a Cade Stover tight end one or Jeff Heirman or anyone else from the past where there's a clear defined pecking order. Like, I'm not trying to hedge my bet on that in any way, but you and I talked about the tight ends coming out of spring. It's like, I think the floor for the overall unit has been raised and perhaps the individual ceiling has dropped a bit again. And Cade Stover is now an NFL tight end. So that's not diminishing Will Kaczmarek, G Scott, Jelani Thurman, Bennett Christian or Patrick Gerd. But I don't think as currently constructed coming out of spring that any of those guys are going to touch Cade Stover's productivity, snap count probably, and not his NFL ceiling. But we'll see what happens. The one who I think Ohio State continues to have the most belief in doing the all-around stuff is Will Kaczmarek. Now, Jelani Thurman, in terms of raw tools, would be the guy that you pick to do that and become an NFL player. But he won't be that, I don't think, by this time next year. Or he could be on his way as a junior. He's just not at that point right now. So again, when we're talking about trying to figure out how much he's going to play, he's the wild card, I think. If what we're talking about is that the ceiling is raised, like Jelani has to be part of that. And I'm expecting that he will, but what number does that look like? I really don't know at this point.
More than 24 snaps.
Yeah. More than 24. I'd take the over. I mean, it's got to be more than 200, I think, if Ohio State's going to do what it wants to do on offense.
I think that's right. And again, he's another guy, like, you just watch some of the stuff that Chip Kelly does in the run game, and there's a lot of stuff with tight ends and receivers oftentimes, too. So it's like kind of pulling or like blocking back against the play. And I like G. Scott can do that, and Will Kaczmarek can do that, too, but the prospect of Jelani Thurman doing it at 6'5" and 250 pounds is pretty exciting. The prospect of Jelani Thurman doing practically anything is exciting because of just what you perceive to be there, and just in terms of talent. But I don't think he's got it all together quite yet. We'll see maybe if we feel differently or see differently or you know, when we get out there for camp in August. But I think the answer will probably be that he's not quite ready to be like a breakout star, but we'll definitely play more. We'll absolutely play more than he played last year.
Yeah. Probably the next time we see him during summer camp season, he'll be like 6'8". So
yeah, he just seemed to keep growing.
All right. So one more freshman played in 2023.
Well, technically two more did, but Noah Rogers transferred, so we don't need to talk about him. The other one who played, he doesn't count. Bryson Rogers played 6 snaps last year. I don't know. Did you come away with any hard opinions on those 6 snaps for Bryson Rogers? Because I don't think I did.
I didn't, but I thought he had a really good spring. I thought he flashed. Getting him to pull his name back out of the portal wound up being a nice little bonus for Ohio State. Couple practices, the student appreciation day. I mean, of the few that we watched, he had a nice long touchdown catch in the student appreciation day scrimmage. And then the coach's clinic Friday morning cold session, I remember 2 or 3 plays he made. I don't think there was a touchdown that I can recall. Maybe there was, but there were just a couple like nice plays, solid routes, good catch, beating coverage that I thought I can see some things starting to happen here for Bryson Rogers that I remember thinking that in training camp last year as well, but like I knew it was going to take some time for him to physically develop, and he's not done with that process right now, but he has taken the next step since then that you would like to see. If we're considering him more of a developmental prospect than obviously Jeremiah Smith or like Garrett Wilson, like those no doubter guys, which I think he fits in that category, you're seeing the development and the progress I think that you would want to see if you're Brian Hartline.
I agree with that. He had a catch like a contested catch down the seam. I remember on that Friday morning. I can't recall who threw it to him, but I remember thinking like, "Oh, that was a nice play." He's pretty smooth, and he's more explosive than I thought. And he does seem to have added some good weight. Probably needs to add more, but like I think he's going to play a little bit this fall. Like I think is he the fifth receiver? Right? If it's Mecca Carnell, Jeremiah, and Brandon Ennis. I think Bryson Rogers is probably fifth, right? Would you hear Jaden Ballard? I would probably give the nod to Bryson Rogers.
I think it'll be Bryson Rogers.
Yeah, I think so too. So again, we don't know what that rotation is going to look like. I think it could be that Brian Hartline's like, yeah, we're going to play 5 guys, and then he's going to play 2 games. Like Jeremiah is not coming off the field. So I don't like it could change. So I hesitate a little bit to project what that'll look like for a guy like Bryson Rogers, but I think he'll play. And I sent this text also on Thursday. I said, I think he'll play, and I think he'll do enough stuff to like get you really excited about the prospect of him perhaps being a starter. And if not a starter, at least more of a key contributor in 2025.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And the rest of those guys that did not get on the field and redshirted, you're looking primarily at the offensive line. And I don't think it's not a surprise that they're still waiting for their first look of action. We've certainly heard good things about all the practice habits for those guys, but like that's par for the course there. That's what you're expecting.
Yeah. It's Josh Padilla, Austin Saraveld, and Miles Walker were the three who didn't play at all. Of those three, I think Saraveld's probably ahead, and maybe that's more of a positional thing, but I think Austin Saraveld, at least on paper, will be a second team guard this fall. And Josh Padilla is the third center behind Seth McLaughlin and Carson Hinsman. But I still think Padilla could definitely be in the starting competition conversation heading into his junior year. And I think Saraveld will be in the conversation to perhaps be a starter heading into his junior year. The one that's a little different is Miles Walker, because he was very much a developmental prospect, didn't play last year, and then like missed all of spring. So like that's not great. It's not to say that he doesn't have a chance. He still does, but might be a little more fair to like consider this his freshman year, assuming he can get healthy and like do some stuff this summer and perhaps get on the field a little bit in the fall. But he's behind the other two. And I think Saraveld is pretty clearly the guy who's got the best chance to, or the one who's likely to play the most this year, probably as a backup.
Yep. If you're talking about the offensive line, I agree with everything you say. And guess what, Bill? The week is over.
Yes.
Another off-season week. You can just scratch it off the checklist. We're 1 week closer. Thanks to everybody who spent some time with us on the podcast daily this week. This was the most extensive ball talk that we had. So that was great. Enjoying that. And maybe we'll do a little bit more of that next week. We still have the defense to go to break down those freshmen. So that will be enjoyable. And so will this upcoming weekend. Hope you all enjoy it. Thanks again for spending time. Have a fantastic Saturday and Sunday. And we'll be back on the podcast daily on Monday morning. For Bill Landis, I'm Austin Ward. We'll see you then.